A rebellion built on hope. We are the Spy-Fi guys, and this is Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Welcome to the Spy-Fi guys.
So I apologize to the universe for that.
Yeah. Wow.
Justice for Dennis M.
Is it though?
I laughed and then I hated myself for laughing.
Welcome to the Spy-Fi Guys, where we cover spy facts, spy fiction, and everything in between. I'm Christian.
And I'm Zach.
And today, in honor of Star Wars Month, we have Star Wars Rogue One, or Rogue One, a Star Wars story, as it's formally titled.
Yeah, I like how you dropped in the Rogue One, a Star Wars story. So I'm very excited to do this episode with you, Christian, because long-time listeners may remember that when we do a James Bond movie, I say, I like James Bond. I've seen all of James Bond, but I wouldn't say I'm a James Bond fan.
Mm-hmm.
When we do Mission Impossible, I say, I like Mission Impossible. I've seen all of them, but I wouldn't say I'm a fan. Well, for Star Wars, I am a fan. A big fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot to say about this movie. And I know the people have had a lot to say about it in the past as well.
Yeah, and I'm a big Star Wars fan as well. I was a Star Wars fan before I was ever a James Bond or a Mission Impossible fan. Or even a Top Gun fan, really. So this was probably my first sort of fandom, as it were.
So what would you say is the peak of your Star Wars fandom?
What do you mean by peak exactly?
Well, because I'm going to flex, if you'll indulge me.
Sure.
I won a Star Wars trivia game by myself against like 25 other people.
All right. Yes, I've heard the story.
And I won a Boba Fett backpack as my as my prize. But I should say, it's just because I knew the original trilogy really well.
Mm.
When they asked me something about a video game or about a prequel, it was a little bit harder. Well, can I help you out, Christian?
Sure. Go.
Christian has been a longtime member of the 501st
I was going to say that would be my peak, probably, as being a member of the 501st Legion, which is a group of Star Wars costumers specifically focused on the Imperial side, where we use our screen-accurate costumes for charity work.
Yeah. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. So I'd say that's my peak, and probably doing, actually, some of the peaks might be doing some of, like, when this run of Star Wars movies came out, 7 through 9 and Rogue One and a Solo came out, we're in the DC area, and I got to do a lot of movie openings for the Air and Space Museum on the mall. So that was probably the peak. Greet fans who were all there lined up. And also hang out with, a lot of other Star Wars fans with costumes. That was probably the peak.
That's a good peak. That's way better than a Star Wars trivia game. Good job.
So, when was the last time you watched Rogue One?
So, here's the deal. Now, first of all, I learned a lot of things watching this movie. But the first is, it made me feel old. Because it came out 10 years ago.
Yes, it did. Yep.
And it doesn't feel like it came out 10 years ago.
No, it does not.
Of course, that means The Force Awakens came out even longer ago than that.
Oh, 11 years ago, yeah.
So I don't think I ever watched it in its entirety since I saw it in theaters.
Interesting. Okay.
However, I have gone on YouTube and watched the space battle a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I watched this twice opening weekend. I went once with the 501st and then once with our friends. Mm-hmm. And then I rewatched it again a couple of times since then. But the most recent time, other than watching it for this recording, that I watched it was right after season 2 of Andor ended. Now, have you've seen season 2 of Andor?
Of course, I'm a Star Wars fan. I've seen all of Andor.
Okay, well, I don't know. Some people who are Star Wars fans, like, they ignore the TV shows, so.
Well, okay, I should say.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm not a true fan, because I haven't seen everything.
I haven't either. I haven't seen the one with the kid that's very, like, E.T. themed.
Skeleton Crew? Actually like that one.
I've heard good things. I just haven't gotten around to it.
I think it's worth your time. But I haven't seen, like, all the Disney Plus series and, like, all the cartoons. Like, I haven't never watched all the Clone Wars.
I've seen almost all of Clone Wars is hard to keep track because I've seen most of it, but, like, the early seasons are, like, completely out of order. It's kind of like the old Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, where it would skip around a lot in the timeline. Mm. So I'm pretty sure I watched all of it, but there could have been episodes I missed. I don't know. I just want to check. And longtime listeners will remember, we actually covered the first, 3 episodes of Andor when we got to see a special sneak peek at the Spy Museum.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
But yeah, so after season two of Andor ends, which, okay, spoilers for Andor and Rogue One, I was like, oh, the where it ends right where it picks up, where we see Cassian Andor at the beginning of Rogue One. So after the end of season two of Andor, I'm like, all right, now I got to watch Rogue One, watch it all the way through. And then at the very end of Rogue One, I'm like, well, now I've got to watch episode four. So I was up for a long time that night.
Wow, nice. So here comes my first nitpick, because nobody loves to nitpick Star Wars like Star Wars fans.
Oh, God, here we
go. I don't like how, and I blame George Lucas for this originally, how everything has to be completely enclosed, right? Everything has to end where the next one begins. So why couldn't the Andor series just end with Andor in a good place, and then we pick up with him later in Rogue One, and have there be like books or comic books or video games or something to fill in the gap, which is how it used to be back in my day.
Mm-hmm. I think actually the reason we have this is because of Tony Gilroy, who did a lot of the pickup and rewrites. He said that his plan was going to be 5 seasons of Andor, and it was but by the time they finished filming the first one, if we do 5 seasons of this, you know, it's going to take 15 years.
Because it goes so slowly.
Because it just takes a lot of work. And so they compressed those 5, you know, that the 4 other seasons into season 2. That's why you have like basically 3 episode
arcs. You can tell it's broken into arcs. Yeah. It's very clear.
3 episode arcs that are like all 1 year period in Andor's life. And that's where you can get, in those in-between periods, that's where we can get more, you know, comics and books and whatnot. Tony Gilroy was like, no, I want to have this leading up to the 5 years right before Rogue One. That was his idea. So it wasn't necessarily a George Lucas idea.
No, I didn't say it was a George Lucas idea. I said George Lucas started it.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Well, no, because there's a whole big gap between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, as filled in by this
there
movie.
There is, but like, I didn't need to know how Obi-Wan got plunked onto Tatooine or how Luke and Leia ended up there necessarily. I don't know. If we start talking about the prequels, we're going to be here all day.
All right. Anyway, so, that's my story about the last time I saw this movie. Now, I did do something a little different this time of viewing for at least a portion of it, not the whole thing, because I just couldn't manage it. I did watch it in 3D.
Really? How did you accomplish that?
With an Oculus headset, and I don't remember the exact setup of it, but I had the file for it, and I was able to watch it.
Oh, okay. You had the file for it.
The stolen data tapes.
I've done terrible things for the Rebellion. Terrible. That's cool. So did you see a difference, though, in 3D?
I did. I mean, it was the parts that I did get to watch it in 3D were really good. I don't know if I ever watched in 3D when it was in theaters, or if they did it in 3D. I don't remember. I'm sure they must have. But it looked good, yeah.
Well, the movie in general, that's one of my major takeaways, is it looks really good on HD TVs, on Disney Plus, which is how I
watch. Even on your iPad.
Sure.
Which is how I watched the parts that I didn't watch in 3D.
Plot synopsis.
So as always, we start with our poetry synopses, and as always, the spoilers begin from what we haven't already covered. So here is the haiku for Rogue One, which is what I'm going to call it. I'm not calling it a Star Wars story. It's too long. Counter intel up. Much unneeded dialogue. Epic space battle. I feel like that summarizes the movie.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I may disagree with you on the dialogue, but sure.
Okay. And then here is the limerick for Rogue One. Andor seems like a real gloomy Gus. He's likely to frown or to cuss. But they beamed up the plans and Darth pleased the fans. See you next time on old Disney Plus.
Oh, nice. I like it.
Thank you. And then here is the real IMDb plot summary. In a time of conflict, a group of unlikely heroes band together on a mission to steal the plans to the Death Star, the Empire's ultimate weapon of destruction.
All right. So we start this movie with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. We do not start with a traditional crawl.
That's
which
right.
Is this technically the first movie that starts with that? Doesn't start with that? Unless you're counting the Ewok adventure or the battle for Endor, which I saw the Ewok adventure for the first time.
Well, what did you think? Cute, huh?
It's something. Anyway, so, but this one, it starts with a jolt, and it's like a musical sting. And we see that director Orson Krennic has found the Ursos, Galen Erso and Lyanna Erso, and their daughter Jyn. And right. Galen Erso is the space weapons designer.
So have the memes messed up this movie for you? Like, everything Krennic says has become a meme.
Yeah. Well, actually, my note here is that Krennic's actually kind of funny. Oh, it's Liliana back from the dead.
Krennic is way better than I remembered.
Well,
way
he's better. Good. He's so good.
He's cool. He's scary. He's funny, but he's also, like, kind of pathetic at the same time. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the unnecessary dialogue begins right away.
Okay, let's hear it.
I wrote down, somebody says to Jin, you know what to do. You know where to go. And then they call Saul Guerrero and he says, you know what to do. It's like, well, then why are we talking? Or why did you even say it?
Because remember my advice to you, and this is what I've learned from Christopher Corey, a lot hours of listening to him podcast or director's commentary. At this point, viewers are goldfish.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they do need it. Said that.
Yeah.
And they apparently I'm a goldfish because you need to keep repeating it to me. It hasn't sunk in.
Yeah.
Well, something else I noticed here is, so people complained about the prequels that they were too sterile.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they said original Star Wars should feel like a lived-in universe where things are grimy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's entirely true. It's kind of like a contrast between Tatooine and the Death Star.
Sure, sure.
You like how Krennic's uniform is rumpled?
It's not crisp, super crisp, you know, not perfect white. It's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it makes it sound like he's been out beating the bushes for a long time. I also noticed a mistake in this part.
Oh.
So Liara or Leah, Lyra?
Lyra, that's the one.
Lyra right? Shoots him in the shoulder.
Yeah.
And there's a part, you can go back and look. He's holding his shoulder. I'm going to demonstrate for Christian. But there's a blaster burn on the upper part of the shoulder where he's not holding it. I thought that was kind of funny.
Hmm.
It may not necessarily be a mistake. It could have been like a shrapnel or whatever.
Yeah. Wait, what is Jin Erso's mom's name? Because it's going to bother. I think we've said like four different names so far.
You're not going to win a Star Wars trivia competition until you know that.
Let's see. Lyra. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so Krennic has the mom killed and captures Galen, but Jin gets away. And Jin is rescued by Saw Gerrera, militant guerrilla fighter of the rebellion.
And then we get the Rogue One credit, and we get the first example of what I call Timu John Williams.
Wow.
Dun, 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 dun. And then it like stops. I'm like, but why not do the Star Wars? Christian, I remember you and I played Star Wars Squadrons, and they did this too. Where it's like almost the Star Wars music, but not quite.
And I honestly, in Squadrons, I didn't notice it.
I
was too caught up in the actual action of it, but it's Michael Giacchino who's getting to, you know, the only thing that he needs to do is basically do a James Bond theme, and he's gotten like all of his wish list because he's done Star Trek, he's done Star Wars,
right?
He's done all the
franchises.
He's done Marvel, yeah. Anyways, so just going back to Saw Gerrera a little bit, did you know he's a character that he originated in the Clone Wars?
I did know that. I learned about that after I saw the movie, I wasn't aware. My understanding, though, is that it's quite different than this depiction.
He is quite different, but it's been years between the two depictions at first. Mm. And we've had actually him filled in between them now to show the change. Yeah. But it was an interesting thing.
So do you want to talk about Saw Gerrera now or when we talk about
him? Let's get to him later. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
Since we just get a brief look at him, so we don't really know what's going on with him. Okay. But yeah, we see older Jin in prison, and then we catch up to our other lead character, Cassian Andor, who's on the Rings of Khafreen, which is where we left him in Andor season 2.
Okay. Well, it's funny because the Rings of Khafreen gets a title.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't feel like Star Wars normally does.
Oh, no. No, this is one of the first times they've done that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is funny because we get this one scene there and then they never come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever.
But yeah, here's some spy stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it's also where we see Andor kill a guy in order to prevent him from falling into enemy hands.
Not just a guy. His informant. This person who's giving him intel. Yeah. He gets intel from this guy on the Death Star. And confirmation that it's, you know, that it's a weapon and that it was designed by Galen Erso.
Yeah. And he tells him there's a pilot who defected and that's how they found out about it.
Yeah.
I forgot about that part, that's how they knew it. And that felt very real because how else would the rebels find out about it until the Imperial flips?
Yeah. Some troopers come by and Andor kills them. But of course, that causes the other troopers to come over and his informant is freaking out. And he can't climb out because he's got an injured arm. So Cassian shoots him. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was the first indication that this ain't your daddy's Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
This is hardcore shit.
And then we go to Jeddah, a planet or city dedicated to the Jedi and one of the places you can get a kyber crystal. And we meet the pilot, Bodhi Rook, played by Riz Ahmed. Riz Ahmed, who recently, in, you know, other connections to spy stories and spy series, he did an Amazon series called Bait, which is about this actor who gets caught up in the James Bond casting rumors. But it's a really introspective story about, you know, being an actor and also just about identity. He's a Pakistani actor, and it's very interesting. So we highly recommend.
And this is one of many movies where he dies. He's like the next Sean Bean. He seems to die.
Oh. But yeah, so he's looking for Saw Gerrera, and he's turned himself in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back to Jin, and she's having a prisoner transfer, but her convoy is interrupted by Andor and K2SO.
That's right. Good to see them again. This is where we get one of many memes as well about being rescued. But how do you feel about her getting rescued and just immediately tries to fight the rebels and run away?
Well, at this point, she's not a rebel. She's on her own, and she doesn't know she's being rescued. She thinks that someone's just trying to break up the convoy, and she's trying to use that opportunity to get out. So I'm okay with it.
All right.
And we go to Yavin, classic Yavin 4.
That's right, the rebel base there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Where Jin is being interrogated, asked about her dad and Saw Gerrera.
So, a couple of things. Mm-hmm. So, as you may know, Christian, we've discussed this in the past, I'm broadly speaking anti-prequel.
Okay.
For every kind of franchise, and the reason why that is because of what I call prequelitis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Where things don't make sense if you have something in the past that isn't there in the future or the present.
Okay.
So one example of this is director Krennic's fancy pants shuttle that he flies around in this movie. So if he gets the nice shuttle, why does Emperor Palpatine get a less fancy shuttle later?
Do we know that that's not a nice, that's not the fancy, how do we know the Lambda class isn't the fancier version?
Yeah, maybe it has better seats inside or
whatever. I would say the Lambda class, you know who we see in flying, usually the Lambda classes is your higher-ups, your Vaders, your Palpatines,
right? Well, except when the Rebels use it as a cargo shuttle later, the Empire doesn't think twice
that's true.
Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, that's not really my point.
Okay.
The reason why I bring it up here is because Mon Mothma is at this meeting.
Sure.
Okay. And it bugs me because I'm like, well, if she's at this meeting, then why isn't she in A New Hope?
They explain that later.
Well, like what? She was like busy or something? Or she was
They evacuated their leadership after the attack.
But General Dadana is there. He's a leader.
Well, they have to have a... Okay. Dadana's a military leader. We need a military. You don't need a politician.
Mm. I don't know. To me, it's just so much cleaner to say Mon Mothma wasn't part of the rebellion in New Hope and then she joined it between then and Return of the Jedi. Is this a nitpick? Yes, I know it's a
nitpick. This is a huge, this is such a ridiculous thing to nitpick because, and I know you hate the prequels, but Mon Mothma is there in the prequels and there's scenes of her starting the rebellion, well, the deleted scenes. And then in the Clone Wars, there's a lot of scenes of her sort of.
Okay.
So Mon Mothma not being involved with the rebellion early doesn't make sense.
I've lost the battle. I get it.
Also, in Rebels, there's a whole big scene of her making her speech defecting from the Empire.
Wait, you mean Andor, not Rebels?
Also, in Rebels.
Oh, in both? They do it in both?
No. Okay. We'll take this brief aside. There's actually the episode of Rebels came first, and then the episode of Andor actually shows what happened before the episode of Rebels, and then so they had to, like, her speech is kind of slightly altered for Andor. But
okay.
So actually, if you want, you could watch that episode of Andor and then go right into the episode of Rebels. There's actually characters other than Mon Mothma who cross over there too.
Well, I guess we know who the true Star Wars fan here is, folks. Okay, anyway, so that's fine. No, I'm sorry. There's something else I want to talk about.
Let's talk
about Saw Gerrera.
Sure.
Now.
What? Okay. Now,
because there's a part where Jin Erso says, "So what if you defected to Saw Gerrera? You guys are all rebels, right?"
Oh, yes, that. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they say Saw Gerrera is a fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they use? Is that the term they use? He's like, he's too militant.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't understand, and maybe you can help explain it to me.
Sure.
Why Saw Gerrera is a fanatic and the rest of the rebels aren't. Because, especially now that we've seen Andor, And I never really got the impression in the original trilogy that the Rebels were these squeaky clean Superman type holier than thou, like would never get their hands dirty. Every character, even Luke Skywalker, has a dark side to them. I could easily see Princess Leia ordering people to their deaths in A New Hope. Sure. So, like, what exactly makes Saw Gerrera worse than the rest of the Rebels? Is it in a cartoon or a book or something?
Actually, yes. Actually, there is a part of them in Rebels where Saw Gerrera wants basically outright war. He's using extreme guerrilla tactics and not worrying about civilian casualties and stuff like that.
So we see that in... We see it in Rebels. Rogue One.
We see a bit in Rogue One. We see a little bit of that in Andor. Mm. And then we don't see him not caring about civilian casualties in Rebels, but it is alluded to it. And there's a part where the main character, Ezra, is like, oh, do I keep stick with my band of Rebels or do... And then Saw Gerrera is trying to recruit him, but then he sees that he's doing worse things.
Well, I think it's also because of the original trilogy, all the fighting takes place either in space or in these battlefields where there are no civilians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is very convenient.
and there's a few books out there now. I think there's a trilogy called like The Reign of Fear or something like that that covers that this same period. And Saw Gerrera is one of the major characters in it. I haven't finished it, but so far it's good.
Okay.
So they need Jyn Erso to get in contact with Saw Gerrera because they know that Saw Gerrera has the intel from the pilots. Mm-hmm. So they're sending Jyn to Jedha with Andor and K2.
Yep. There's an appearance of Bail Organa, and then there's a wide shot of the hangar, and you can see the ghost from Rebels.
Ah, okay. I was going to say the ghost. We also see, what's his name? Chopper. There's also a call for General Syndulla. I'll just point out all the Rebels Easter eggs. Yeah.
That's fine.
All right. So we have Saw Gerrera who meets Bodhi Rook, doesn't believe him, and is sent to Bor Gullet.
So I guess this is part of the idea of why he's a fanatic. I guess like the mainstream Rebels wouldn't like sick a giant creepy monster on him.
That's seemingly like a lie detector.
Yeah, it's like a Lovecraftian thing. I like how there's a trope in every Star Wars movie. There's always at least one weird like alien creature.
Yes.
And with this one, there's no exception.
Bor Gullet. And then we see the Death Star. And
dun, dun, dun.
This is the what impressed me here was the scale of it. Like, you know, you think about, oh, it's the size of a small moon. And you see what a Star Destroyer in comparison to the Death Star looks like. I'm like, oh my God, wow, that is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Not even a super Star Destroyer, just a regular old Star Destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
And we get CGI horror Tarkin.
And how do we feel about that? I remember this was the big controversy when the movie actually came out.
I'm okay with it. The thing is that the guy who they had play Tarkin, what's his name? Guy Henry. Yeah, Guy Henry, who plays Tarkin.
Mm.
Look a picture of him. He could have just played Tarkin.
Let's take a look.
Just like a little, like some dye his hair white.
My God.
He could have just played Tarkin. You didn't need to do CGI Tarkin.
It's because what Disney likes to do is they like to push, actually Star Wars too, is they like to push the boundaries of technology.
True. You know, as a CGI and, you know, visual effects, what's the word? Pushing those boundaries. It looks really good, but you could have just had the guy play Tarkin. And they do that for other characters. They don't CGI the face of General Dodonna. You just got a guy who looks kind of similar.
Yeah, come on. I also remember in theaters when they first did, I thought they were going to have Tarkin in the shadows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and they do. They start that, yeah.
Yeah, very brief scene of him in the shadows. You hear his voice, and then you don't see him again, because that's what Director Krennic is for, is to fill in the role of Tarkin. You did not need zombie Tarkin.
Honestly, looks pretty good, but yeah, we could have just had Guy Henry play Tarkin. He looks so much like a young Peter Cushing that you could have just done, oh well, whatever.
It also occurred to me, instead of having Tarkin, they should have had Admiral Mahdi, right? So for those of you who aren't true Star Wars fans, Admiral Mahdi is the guy who gets choked by Darth Vader in the conference room. But it's because he says things like, we don't need the Force, we got the Death Star. And Darth Vader even says to him, don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
I think it's a royal you.
Well, I guess it's open to interpretation. So that would have been cool.
Yeah. All right. And then we get a little flashback to little Jyn with her family and Krennic on Coruscant. They're having like a party or something.
Yeah, I thought Galen Erso looked kind of cool in his uniform.
We get the arrival on Jeddah, and we find out that the Imperials are taking Kyber Crystal. They're strip mining the temple. This is one of the other Jedi temples around the galaxy. Mm. And so their plan is to find Saw and use Saw to find Galen Erso.
Which makes sense. They run into Dr. Evazan and his friend. How do you feel about this? I didn't like it.
I'm okay with it. I'm like, if they got the death penalty on 12 systems, this could be one of them. Is it 12 or is it 7?
12.
It is 12. Okay. My first instinct was right.
Yeah. So the thing is, the whole city is about to get destroyed. Yeah, so somehow they're there and then they escape like an hour later. I don't know.
Well, they're on their way out already. They're leaving.
Okay. So we also see Donnie Yen. We hear him before we see him.
Yes. He's panhandling, somehow knows that Jin's wearing a Kyber crystal. Him and Baze, last name, I forget his last name. They're the Guardians of the Wills, which longtime Star Wars fans recognize. That was like George Lucas's initial title for it, like a journal of the Guardians of the Wills. That's right.
Yeah. I've heard rumors that gets passed around. It's like the Wills are like what they ended up being, midichlorians, or as like little creatures in the Force. There's been a bunch of different ideas about what the Wills are.
Yeah. There's an episode of Clone Wars where Yoda communes with the Wills.
There you go.
Anyway, so this town is ready to blow, but figuratively, but also literally.
Yep, as it turns out.
Yeah. So the Saw Gerrera's troops mount an attack on the Imperials, and as you see here, they really don't care about civilian casualties. They're just trying to blow up everything. Jin managed to save this crying kid, which as a father got me. I'm like, oh God, that child, no.
Well, it's to show her, so that she's a good guy, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, Jin Erso, I don't know about you, didn't do very much for me as a character. They tried to do like the badass, like Han Solo, I only care about myself. In my opinion, it doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. But this is where it shows that she's on a path to becoming a good guy.
The Jin and Galen stuff works because of my father, so it got me. But I like Jin as a character. I mean, this is where we get into the some of the problems about the rewrites and everything, is that what the trailer showed versus what trailers didn't show. We didn't know who her character was, but we end up with someone who was raised to be a rebel, basically, but like a more extreme rebel. And then she leaves it all behind, and then she comes back to the rebellion and ends up actually inspiring the whole rebellion, really.
I could see what they were going for. Mm-hmm. I just didn't feel like it really worked for me.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so there's a part where Andor, a guy pulls a grenade, Andor shoots the guy, and then the guy and the grenade fall into what looks like a building and blows up the building. Well, not a whole building, but like a stall.
Part of the building, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, part of a building. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Also, I noticed that the rebels throw a grenade, and then there's guys like standing in the open, just shooting at the, you noticed this too, just standing in the stormtrooper, and then the stormtroopers just immediately kill them. Right? It's like, you ever heard of cover?
So Andor and Jin almost get captured, but they get rescued by Chirrut Imwe and Baze, whose last name I don't remember. Chirrut Imwe, played by Donnie Yen.
Which would have been better if we didn't just have a scene where Jin fights a guy with a stick, and then 5 seconds later, Donnie Yen finds the guy with the stick.
Yeah, but Donnie Yen's blind.
Yeah, but I'm saying cut out the Jin part. You don't need it.
Okay. They're rescued by Chirrut and Baze from the Imperials, but then they immediately get captured by Saw's men. And I love the part where they're putting bags over their heads and Chirrut's like, are you crazy? I'm blind.
Well, yeah, was that in the trailers? I remember people like that.
So.
Actually, I'm going to give away one of my favorite quotes around here. Sure. Is the part where Chirrut is like facing off against the troopers. Yeah. I like getting time stormtroopers talk. I think it's just because of the red versus blue. Like, but one of them says, he's blind. Is he deaf?
That's pretty good.
I thought that was kind of a cool line, actually.
Yeah. So we see the Star Destroyer leaves Jeddah, and Jin is reunited with Saw Gerrera. We find out that he abandoned her because people were starting to figure out who she was, and it was safer for her to be away from him than to be with him, because people would, you know, either try to kidnap her or kill her.
And well, she says, "You left me behind." Mm-hmm. So imagine it's like Doctor Who, where he just left her somewhere. But again, it's like, why couldn't they just have a conversation about it? Because Saw isn't much into feelings.
No, he's not. And there's a very good book called Rogue One Catalyst, I believe. Or is it? No, there's Catalyst, and there's also like Rebel Rising, which covers this whole period. So there you go. It's what you wanted. You wanted Star Wars books and TV and comic books to fill in these gaps. There you go.
Right. That's fair.
She says that the Rebels needed her for an introduction, but now that she's done with that and doesn't need to do anything else. And we see the Death Star arriving at Jedha, and we have the very first test firing, not on the full capacity, but just one reactor only. A statement, not a manifesto, as Tarkin says.
Yeah, of course it looks like a WMD blast when it goes off. You probably knew this, but George Lucas based the Death Star on, like, atomic weapons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's where I got the idea for it. And I had an observation here, something that I liked. Did you notice that so Krennic does the test, and all of his, like, people are white male officers.
Yep.
So this may be a hot take, but I always felt like the Rebels are the ones who are supposed to be diverse. The Empire are the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're not supposed to be diverse. But then I'm like, well, the fans like the Empire. They're like dressing up as the Empire. So I guess I should probably let it go.
Well, here's the thing. Who we see who's an Imperial who's not a white male?
Bodhi.
But what level of Imperial is he?
Very low.
He's a cargo pilot.
Extremely low. Yeah, see, that works. So that's why I like this part, is because like the upper crust, just like in the original trilogy. Yeah. But I think Disney Plus made it pretty clear that the Empire is going to be diverse, and I'm fine with that.
It's more the First Order that's diverse, actually.
Well, what about in Obi-Wan Kenobi, where you have the black Jedi woman?
Well, that's the Inquisitors. That's different. They're not not in the Imperial hierarchy of command. They just go right under. They're not in the Imperial military. They're like Vader, basically.
Well, if I cared enough, I would go back to Luke, but I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I was gonna say in Obi-Wan, you do have an Imperial who's a turncoat, played by what's her name from Indira Varma.
I don't remember Obi-Wan Kenobi super well. I just remember people getting stabbed with lightsabers not once but twice and surviving it.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, where were we? So Baze notices Bodhi is in the next cell to them and is trying to figure out who he is. And Saw watches Galen's message from Bodhi delivered, and it's intercut with the Death Star sequence.
There's the cliche where they shoot a lock to open a door. I love that. That's like peak Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so they explain that the reason why the Rebels are able to destroy the Death Star is not because there's a flaw with the system, but because Galen intentionally sabotaged it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a recap or a recon.
A retcon.
A retcon. It's a retcon. Thank you. And how do you feel about that?
I'm okay with it. I mean, I think it makes more sense than a shoddy workmanship on a project of this scale.
Well, I don't think it's shoddy workmanship. It never made a ton of sense, because you have a trench run with turbo lasers at the end protecting something that the Empire presumably doesn't know is there. They remember the proton torpedo like arcs into it. It never makes any sense. A lot of stuff in the original trilogy,
you know,
as much
why
as
it
I love
arcs
it, doesn't make sense because of the force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, a lot of stuff with the original trilogy doesn't make sense. And I appreciate them attempt to explain it here, but it's going to lead to another question later.
All right. Well, the term lasers were not in the trench itself. They were on the top.
Okay, maybe I didn't understand this, but do you remember the part where it shows the turbo lasers firing like directly from the left to the right? It looks like they're in the trench. Are they not?
They're
flying
in video
the trench
games.
Because lasers coming right at them. No, in the
video
movie.
Games there were.
No, not in the video games, in the movie.
I think I'd have to look at that again.
Whatever.
They need to get the plans, which are in the archive at Scarif.
Mm-hmm.
There's a shockwave coming. Like you said, they escape.
Saw dies for no reason.
Well, I mean, did you see that he has two prosthetic robot legs? So he can't exactly run fast on those.
Yeah. Something I forgot was that all of Saw Gerrera's men die.
Mm-hmm.
There's no body, no death, but presumably they do.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I thought they were the ones who joined up with the Rebels at the end. But that's
not the case.
Those were other Rebel red shirts.
Other Rebels, yep. Mm-hmm. Tarkin decides he's going to take over the Death Star project. Of course, Krennic is upset about this. Because this is my triumph.
My achievement. Come on, it's the meme. Yeah, the office politics is kind of cool.
So we find the Rebels are on their way to Edu, where Galen Erso is. And Andor gets orders to kill him. which Jin doesn't know.
So did the Rebels know that Galen was at Edu this whole time, or they only found out about it because the Rogue One crew told them?
They found out from Bodhi, because that's where Bodhi flew out of.
No, but I'm saying Bodhi told the Rogue One crew, who told the Rebel High Command.
Exactly.
That's the case. Mm-hmm. But they're like, we can't take any chances. Go bomb it. So I remember in this part being kind of bored. I remember thinking I'm bored in this part, watching a Star Wars movie in theaters. Going back and watching again, I was not bored.
Okay.
I thought it was actually pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked the confluence of three different things crashing together at the same time. Mm-hmm. Krennic, the Rebels, and the heroes.
Jin tells him about the weakness, but in the chaos, she did not grab the hologram, which would have been the thing to do. Mm-hmm. So they only have her word as opposed to an actual hologram from Galen Erso saying it.
Right. Well, then they're like, let's go get Galen Erso and have him tell them, which makes a lot of sense.
So they get into Edu, they end up crashing, and the Rebellion loses their signal, so they decide to send a squadron. So Bodhi and Andor say that they're going to go off to steal a ship so they can get out of there, but Andor is trying to fulfill his mission without anyone know it, but Baze and Chirrut figure out that he's there to, you know, kill someone.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chirrut is like, the Force like moves differently around someone who's going to kill somebody, which I loved. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they go after him. Krennic also arrives to find out who sent the message via the pilot, and like, he threatens to kill all of Galen's scientists, but so Galen reveals himself, but Krennic kills them anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, of course, I thought, is this Dr. Evil who does that? Or maybe it's the guy from Moonraker? It's definitely a James Bond villain, though.
It's Goldfinger.
Goldfinger. Thank you. Yes.
He kills the mob with all with the Delta 9 nerve gas. Yep.
Yep.
After just explaining the entire plan to them.
Yeah, so Andor has Galen in his sights, but he can't kill him.
Yep.
Which was cool. I didn't remember that part. I like that.
And he also sees that Jin has snuck onto the platform and then gets a message from K2 that there's a squadron coming, and he tries to delay them, but they can't delay them.
Mm-hmm.
And Jin almost reaches her dad, but a bomb explodes the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we get ships in X-Wings coming in as chaos.
Oh my God, fighting, shooting everywhere.
Yeah.
It was great.
Krennic leaves, and Jin is almost knocked off the platform by, you know, his shuttle leaving.
This movie kind of felt like a video game, and I'm not saying that in a bad way.
Okay.
It's more at the end, but this part, it kind of felt like something like Uncharted, where it's like, hit the button not to pull me off the edge of the platform.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Jin and Galen finally reunite, and he gets to have his last moments with her before he dies. And Andor gets Jin off the platform, and Bodhi comes in with a stolen ship, and they escape. And as they escape, Jin confronts Andor.
Yeah, she's like, you were totally going to kill him, weren't you? Also, the troopers kind of come off like the putties from Power Rangers, where they get easily beaten up all the time. Especially in Jedha, but it's also true here as well.
Mm. Yeah. But I mean, they were like that on Endor as well.
It's true. It's the only time they've ever been effective and scary is the opening of A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's all been downhill from there. Sure would be nice if someone would try to make them scary again, but oh well.
I feel like there was something where they actually managed that, and I don't remember what it was. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so speaking of making things scary again, Mustafar.
So quick funny story. My wife and I went to go see an Indian music director named A.R. Rahman.
Sure.
And
oh, wait. He did the music for Slumdog Millionaire, right?
I wouldn't be surprised. He's done a lot of movies. There's a part where they do a song that goes, Mustafa, Mustafa, ba-ba-da, Mustafa. And I was like, hey, is that a planet from Star Wars? And I looked it up. It's Mustafar in Star Wars.
Yep. Yeah, he did Jai Ho from Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
And he did the rest of the soundtrack. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I knew that name.
How do you feel about the Darth Vader cameo in this part? I guess you need to have Darth Vader here if you're going to have him later.
Yeah. And it was interesting that, well, you place him at Mustafar, being that's where he became Vader. And there's a lot of comics and, you know, books about why he has his castle in Mustafar.
Is this the first movie where it's been established that he has a castle there?
Movie, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so Krennic goes crying back to Vader saying, wah, Tarkin took over my Death Star project.
Well, I think to be fair, see, I thought about this too. I was like, why is he going to complain to Darth Vader? Is he out of his mind? But Darth Vader says something like, do you know why I summoned you here? So I think Darth Vader called him there. It wasn't his idea.
But he still went and complained to Tarkin. And his whole thing is like, that means I'm still in charge?
Yeah, he didn't exactly handle it very well, even if it wasn't his idea. No. That's true. Do you also notice a couple of things? The Royal Guards, which I don't know why the Royal Guards are there. I thought they guarded the Emperor, not Darth
Vader.
There's more
than one Royal Guard. Okay.
Yeah. And then also, he's in the back to tank. And is this the first time we see him out of this, like completely out of the suit? So this may be kind of silly and might be kind of a nitpick, but when I was a kid, I always thought the suit was keeping him alive.
Sure. Yeah.
Kind of like Tony Stark. So like when Luke takes the mask off at the end, he's about to die. He can't survive without the mask on, but he wanted to see Luke with his own eyes anyway.
Yes. Except he could also be out in his hyperbaric chamber on his Super Star Destroyer. That's where you first get the glimpse of him, you know, his bald head with the...
You see him from behind.
Down. Yeah.
The headpiece comes down, but the front mask could have still been there.
So, I mean, but he's in a back-to-tank. So a back-to-tank is self-healing. So that's, you know, that's not... What's your problem?
It's going to keep him alive.
Yeah, it's going to keep him alive. That's probably how... And the other thing is that being in the suit is, I think in some, like, expanded material, is like... constantly painful, basically.
Okay, yeah, that does sound right. So he says something to Krennic, you need to make sure that Galen Erso didn't give them any information that they could use to compromise the Death Star, right? Doesn't he say something like that?
Yeah.
So like, yeah, spy movie. You need to do counterintelligence, counterespionage.
So we go to the rebels at Yavin, and we get Bail, we get Mon Mothma. I don't think we saw Bail before.
But we actually did. I wrote it down, but we just skipped it. Right. He doesn't say anything, but he's in the background.
But we get Mon Mothma, and we get some other, you know, members of the council, including Palma, who, like, straight up wants to surrender right now. And, like, she's saying, no, we're trying to avoid a war. It's like, what do you think you've signed up for?
I think what she's trying to say was, we're low resistance. We're not going to full-scale war the way Saw Gerrera wanted. Doesn't have the stomach for
it. But, like, they've got ships and armies. What do you think you're gearing up for?
Well, I like the part where she's like, scatter the forces, scatter the fleet.
I was just incredulous at that. Yes, it's scary that there's a Death Star, yes, but she's so afraid of having an all-out war. I'm like, what do you think you're starting here?
A good question.
But some of them now rightfully think that this could be a trap. I mean, there's no Death Star, but what the Emperor is trying to do is get them to gather all their troops together to wipe them all out in one swift stroke.
I actually liked this part. It felt very real, where they were like, we can't take the risk. We'll do a calculation, ask K2SO to calculate the odds, and we're not going to do it. The problem is it gets undermined later when the Rogue One crew go in. And they're like, all right, let's just go in anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, now that it's, you know, better to ask for... you know, beg for permission, for forgiveness, and ask for permission in this case. That's basically what it is. And say, all right, this is happening. You ready? We need to support them.
Yep.
You need to send troops to Scarif to get the Death Star plans. We get the line, rebellions are built on hope.
Again. Yeah. More than once.
Yeah. And Mon Mothma says they need the full support of the council, so they're not doing anything officially. But unofficially, Andor and a bunch of other rebel Black Ops troops, including Melshi, who is a main character in season 2 of Andor, but you don't remember him probably.
Is he a human or is he that little guy?
He's human.
Oh, then no, all the humans blur together.
He's the one who goes to Saw Gerrera in season 2 and like learns how to be a bomb maker, and then like he has him huffing the gas.
Oh, he's like the Weasley little guy. Yeah, I remember that guy.
Yeah, so he is in this. That's why they put him in Andor, because like they wanted to show his backstory. Like, is he in this last part, he becomes like a second in command to all of the troops. Let's give him a backstory.
Yeah, I completely missed it. I guess I'm not a true fan.
So, yeah, they volunteer to help Jin, and they all board the Solan Imperial ship, which is given the code name Rogue One.
This is also where Andor says, we've all done terrible things to help the Rebellion. And then he goes on to list a number of things that aren't especially terrible. I know we've already talked about it. just wanted to put it out there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm. I mean,
so anyway, you want to talk about Rogue One?
I just want to talk about when you first heard there was a movie going to be called Rogue One. What did you think it was going to be about?
Obviously, I thought it was going to be a movie that has been rumored about for a long time, which was a Top Gun Star Wars about an X-Wing fighter squadron. Because mm-hmm. there's a Rogue Squadron mm-hmm. in the movies, and then, of course, in the games and books and things mm-hmm. like that. So yep. when you hear Rogue One, you think, who's Rogue One? It's Wedge Antilles. Oh, my God, no. A Wedge Antilles movie.
He's Rogue Leader, not Rogue One.
Well, maybe I got a little bit ahead of myself. That sometimes happens.
And it was like, I want to put it out there because, like, yeah, when we all heard Rogue One, like, oh, it's going to be an X-Wing starfighter movie. Oh, great. And obviously, this is not. There's a bit of that, but this is not the main focus of it. And yeah, there was supposed to be a Rogue Squadron movie directed by what's her name, who directed Patty Wonder Jenkins. Woman. Yeah, which hasn't happened. But
supposedly it's not completely dead.
We'll see.
Supposedly.
But we do at least. We have some sort of pilot-based Star Wars movie coming out next year with Ryan Gosling, Star Wars Starfighter. I mean, it's in the name there. They can't not have it be about
I absolutely hate that name, by the way. Did you ever play Star Wars Starfighter, the game?
I was going to say, that I was going to bring it up. There was a Star Wars Starfighter, yes.
Did you play it?
I did.
Oh my God, it's terrible.
It's terrible, but better game? Star Wars Jedi Starfighter.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But even better game than those is any of the Rogue Squadron games.
That's right. So yeah, Rogue One, I never liked the title of Rogue One, but I also couldn't think of anything better. So I guess you could go
but
with that.
But also this gives us the origin of why they're called Rogue Squadron. Because they're mm-hmm. named in honor of Rogue One.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they explicitly say that in the movie? Or is it
not
just
in the movie.
In
the comics later on. There's comics. Between episode 4 and 5, the Marvel comics, right after the Death Star blows up and all that, and they decide to rename Red Squadron to Rogue Squadron in honor of them.
Okay, there you go.
So it is explicit in the comics, but not in the movie. But it's implied in the movies. We also see Bail is going back to Alderaan. He's going to send his word to his friend, the Jedi. So this is where it's, you know, Bail leaves, and it's implied that Mon Mothma leaves as well.
Mm-hmm. And there's a part where he says, "Captain Antilles, I got a job for you."
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't name drop Leia, but he references Leia.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, okay, we've hit the high point of the movie. Let's go get him. Oh my God, why is there still an hour left of the movie?
Yeah, yeah. So they get to Scarif, and it has the planetary shield from Spaceballs.
Yeah.
And so they have to transmit a code. And now the whole time I'm thinking, is the code 12345? That's the same combination I have in my luggage.
Oh my God. I don't know if I should show my wife that movie because she knows what Star Wars is, but I don't know how well Spaceballs will hold up.
It actually holds up pretty well, I think.
Have you shown it to your kids?
I wouldn't show it to. Actually, when they're a little older, I would. There's nothing really.
Okay. So anyway, so he breaks back in Rogue One. There's more unnecessary dialogue that I actually wrote down.
What is it? He says
to Jin, "We're landing," and then he turns to the crew and he says, "We're coming in." They didn't need to say either of those things.
All right, the movie should not be this long.
And then Jin makes another speech about how they're going to fight and win or whatever.
Well, I mean, they are going into something with against all odds here. You know, they've got, what, 20 people? Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. They say they're going to take the next chance and the next until they run out of chances or they accomplish their goal. And then we get them do the old uniform swap trick.
That's right. Classic Star Wars as well.
Yes.
They even have like the landing party, or like a search party come on board and then they knock them out or maybe kill them.
Love it. They definitely kill them. But he's like, you know what? Diego Luna looks good in an Imperial uniform.
Except they couldn't find a razor somewhere or scissors to make him kind of look like
a hero.
It gives
me an excuse to have facial hair when I'm dressed up as an Imperial officer. Because, all right, if he didn't look out of place, then I'm okay.
So it's Christian dressed up as Andor, dressed up as an Imperial officer.
There we go. Yeah.
I did like the part where K2 starts to say, "I have a bad feeling about this."
Yeah, he gets cut off. Yeah, and the Krennic also arrives back at Scarif.
I'm sorry, this prompts another question.
Here we go.
Jump in. I told you I had a lot to say about this movie, so if you don't mind. So if the Empire knows that the Rebels are after the Death Star plans, and if the only reason they can destroy the Death Star is because Galen built a flaw into it, I'm kind of surprised the Empire... No, I know, but hang on. What I'm saying is, I'm surprised the Empire didn't go back through the plans and scour them with a fine-toothed comb to see if there's any flaws that the Rebels might have found. Now, I know the Empire is incompetent. That's been established. And
incompetent and arrogant. There you go. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, the only person, like, not everyone knows that Galen or that the Rebels are after the plans. Pretty much the only people...
That's not correct. Tarkin says, Scarif, there's an attack on Scarif. Don't we keep an original copy of the Death Star plans as
Scarif? They know that later.
Let's go. No, well, he knows it now, like, while it's happening.
Yes, and it takes them a while to get there.
Well, I guess the events of the movie move really fast. Mm-hmm. Like, when this movie ends, it's where A New Hope begins, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, it's probably, like, 48 hours.
The only person who really knows, and I think that's part of the reason why he's there, is Krennic. That's why Krennic got scared to make sure that, see what's going on with plans. And then immediately, as soon as he gets there, bombs blow off. So it's not like they really had time to go scour through them.
Yeah, that's okay. Good point. Good point.
Yeah. Speaking of, so K2, you know, needs to get an interface for the map, and the Rebels are planting charges at different, you know, landing pads. It's funny for me, growing up in Hawaii, to see palm trees in Star Wars. Like,
it did feel like Hawaii, didn't it?
Yeah. They filmed, I don't remember, I think the Maldives, maybe. I used to joke that if Hawaii was in Star Wars, it'd be like Naboo, because, hey, we had a monarchy and we had, you know, a constitutional monarchy and we're nice and, you know, we have,
like,
you know, nice landscape. Yeah. It was like, no, maybe we'd be Scarif, actually, because we were, you know, overtaken by an imperial power and had, you know, we still have military bases, you know. I'm like, maybe we're Scarif, actually.
I also thought Hawaii could be Alderaan, because Alderaan's peaceful. We have no weapons.
Except we have weapons. We have a military base.
As it turns out.
They set off all the charges. Krennic sees, deploy the garrison. Are we blind?
I like the part where they have misinformation on the comms.
Oh,
they're
that's
like, we're
great.
Attacking. Mm-hmm. Attack in pad 5. Yeah. No, we're under attack in pad 7. Very spy stuff.
As Andor says, make 10 men feel like 100. Mon Mothma hears the report about the rebels on Scarif. She's about to leave, and that's when she gets the report that the rebels are on Scarif and that Admiral Raddus is going to fight. And so she says to send fighters. We get an R2 and 3PO cameo. And Jin.
Yeah, which actually makes sense, because if Leia is there and they're on Leia's ship, then they would all leave right away.
All right.
Didn't bother me.
Put a pin in that, and I will talk about it later.
Okay.
Jin and Andor get to the data retrieval, which is really cool looking. And then we get an AT-AT attack, or are we going to have this discussion? What do you call them?
George Lucas is wrong. That's what I said.
Did you
call them? AT-AT walkers.
Yes. All right. Because what do you call an AT-ST then? An ATS?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways. Yeah, so it's AT-AT attack. And then it looks like they're about to get blown up, but then X-Wings arrive. Here's where the fun begins.
It's super sweet. Yeah.
Red Leader and Gold Leader.
So I never clap at the theater, but I clapped to the theater for Red Leader and Gold Leader. They got me good.
You see the ghost too, so you get the multiple generations of fans being like, hey, it's that thing.
Can't believe that they did Red Leader and Gold Leader. It was like incredible. And that's when good. You watch it, I remember in the theater that they had like a green screen kind of like cloud around them.
Okay.
Well, I remember that they looked like they were splicing footage from the 70s into footage today. If you go back and watch it on Disney Plus now,
it looks great.
You really can't even tell.
No, I don't. A few of them actually get through the shield before it closes.
Yeah. I mean, once the fleet jumps in, it's like a completely different movie. It's like incredible movie.
and the base gets locked down, but they still need to transmit the plans. So Andor tells Bodhi to transmit to the rebels that they need to get that shield gate open. But Bodhi needs to tie in into the main comms tower. That's his, you know, mission. And Jin gives K2 a blaster so he can defend himself while they're going to get the the data.
Yeah. So this is like a bit of a video game too, where there's a side quest, another side quest, another side quest, and all the things they have to do doesn't make any sense. And I know that's a Star Wars thing as well. Like Obi-Wan Kenobi having to crawl to the edge of a bottomless pit to turn the tractor beam off doesn't make any sense. But yeah.
So the X-Wings, you take out the Walker, and this you know, this part reminded me of?
Well, there was a Battlefront 2 trailer where they do this.
Well, no, but just the sentiment of it. I think they're about to die, and then they see some X-Wings fly in, and it reminds me of Pearl Harbor, that scene where Rafe and Danny take their P-40s over Battleship Row, and the soldiers in the water start shouting, yeah, P-40s. You can basically feel the rebel troops on the ground saying, yeah, X-Wings.
That's right. Yeah, nice.
And this is also just some of the best-looking X-Wing battles we've ever had.
Yeah, no, it's true.
There are some, like, very Top Gun-inspired shots of, like, as if the camera was mounted to the underside of the wing as it's flying around and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, it's beautiful. Love it.
I know you didn't mean this as a shot at the sequels, but it looks better than the sequels' battles.
I remember that there was a scene which had really great, and I was like, was it? Because I feel like I remember liking in the sequels the part where Poe comes in with the X-Men. Like, no, you really don't get a good shot. Like, there's a few good, cool shots of them, like, flying over the water and then, but the actual X-Wing battle itself, you see it more from the perspective of Finn and Han Solo on the ground. You don't see it from the air. And also, some of the moves that Poe Dameron accomplishes just aren't possible, or, like, they don't look real. They feel very, you know, not... It doesn't obey the laws of physics, which I know sounds funny because it's Star Wars, but they have to feel like they're moving correctly, even if with your reference points.
It has to convince you.
It has to convince you. And some of what he does just seems so unnatural that it just brings me out of it. It wasn't not a shot at the sequels, but it also wasn't a shot at the sequels.
Yeah, that's fair. So the space battles look great, and they're flying around.
And it reminded me of playing Star Wars Squadrons with you and a bunch of our friends, because there's literally a level that's set in, you know, Scarif Base.
It reminded me of Battlefront as well. It felt like you're watching a Battlefront cutscene. You can clearly see where they inspire from, but you can also tell that Gareth Edwards and the crew were Star Wars fans. People could actually complain that this movie is like fan service, but they give the fans what they want. I just wanted X-Wing battles.
So Jin and Andor are in the data storage. K2 is guiding them, and the troopers are starting to approach, and then we get the TIEs getting released and starting to attack the X-Wings, and goodbye, Red 5. Well, we need that spot open anyways.
Well, it's funny, because they tried to explain why Luke was able to be Red 5, but then Red 5 lost his ship. So they just had, like, an extra X-Wing?
No, I think it was more of the call sign was open, not necessarily the ship.
Oh, the call sign.
The call sign's not specifically tied to that ship. It's just the call sign that was open.
Okay, I always thought that Red 5 was sick or something, and that's why you got to fill in for him.
Also, when we have Jin and Andor in the data storage, they, like, go through the list of all these other top secret projects, one of them being hyperspace tracking. Hey, there's a call forward to The Last Jedi. Yes, we're going to get attacked by angry Star Wars fans since I mentioned The Last Jedi.
Yeah, that's fair. So do you like how it's tapes? Someone has made the observation, I'm not the first one to say it, that Star Wars technology is stuck in the 70s, where they actually have, like, physical tapes. You have to pull it out of this giant Mission Impossible style, like, database. But also, it's like in Andor when they steal money and it's actual physical cash.
Oh, yeah.
That was funny, too.
Yeah. And we get first of our main character deaths. We get K2SO getting shot up by troopers. And this is where I started, first time watching it, I started getting feeling a little queasy about the fates of all of our crew. Even though I know none of them show up in the rest of the movies, I'm like, but they could just go off and live somewhere else.
I remember people at the time were arguing that all the characters in Rogue One have to die, because otherwise, why wouldn't they be in A New Hope? That never made any sense to me.
No.
Yeah.
You mean, like, why Mon Mothma's not there?
I mean, like, there's a million other reasons why they could not be there. It's a whole rebellion, so.
Before he dies, though, K2 tells them they need to climb the tower. They can still transmit if they're at the top of the tower. And then Bodhi gets pinned down. And He needs to connect the shuttle to the shuttle. The cable gets caught on something, so he has to go back. And he manages to get in. But we can see the tide is beginning to turn against the rebels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, people start dying. Blue leader dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Melshi, Baze, and Chirrut get pinned down, and they still need to activate the comms tower switch. And then Jin and Cassian are climbing. They manage to grab the data tape, but then Krennic finds them.
I like the vertical fight where they're fighting while hanging on to it. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that in the when I saw it before, and I thought it was a fun fight scene. Yeah.
Chirrut is going to make his move. I'm one with the Force, and the Force is with me.
He says that way too much, by the way.
No, it was great. It was great.
Okay.
I will take no arguments. And he manages to pull the switch, and then in that, fight in the data tower, Andor gets hit. And I honestly, the first time watching, I thought that was the end of Andor.
Mm. Oh, like he just dies here?
He gets, blown up. And this is like the end of The Godfather with everyone just getting taken out.
It actually, you ever seen The Dirty Dozen? It's more like that.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. So on my list.
It's a military movie where the heroes go in and they're not going to make it out, but they accomplish the mission.
Yep.
Also, something you'll notice, though, with the exception of Chirrut, there's no bodies.
Mm.
Right? And you know what that means. No body, no death.
I'm pretty sure we see K2SO's body.
Well, he's not alive. So, well, he could be repaired.
Droid rights. Droid rights. But yeah, so, Baze finds his faith again after he managed to get to Chirrut's body. And I'm honestly, guys, like, I'm still sad here when, both of them die. And, they need to press the attack for the space battle. So they get some ion torpedoes and take out one of the Star Destroyers.
So, I know this part is awesome. Everybody loves it. I just feel I have a nitpick. Again, been a long time since I had an nitpick.
Okay.
And I just feel, watching it again, that it's just way too effective, right? Because they push the Star Destroyer into the other Star Destroyer, and it, shatters it.
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't they just push it into the shield gate?
I don't know that they're necessarily trying to push it into the other one. I think they were trying to push it into the shield gate, and then accidentally get the other one, too.
Well, I don't know. I think Admiral Raddus is just like how I drew it up. I think that was his plan all along.
He seemed very like Winston Churchill to me for some reason, Admiral Raddus.
Just because the way he talks.
Yeah.
It also made me wonder, okay, so a Star Destroyer crashes through the shield gate.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't crash through the shield gate. It crashes the gate itself, if you watch it. Yeah.
Correct. You're right. Uh-huh. But then, why didn't a huge wreckage of the shield gate and the Star Destroyer itself come crashing down onto the base?
I assume that it just landed somewhere else.
Or, maybe it burned up the base atmosphere.
Or that. The base itself is not, is only in one part of the planet. It's not the entire planet. So presumably it just landed somewhere else. Who knows?
It's a guy.
But also, as throw in your the Hammerhead Corvettes were seen being given to the rebels by still Senator of the Time Princess Leia in an episode of Star Wars Rebels.
I see. Thank you.
And also, they are based on designs from the Old Republic video game, the MMO.
Oh wow, that's a callback.
Mm-hmm. So it's a design that's been in use in the Star Wars galaxy for a long, long time. And then we, say goodbye to Baze as he gets blown up, and also goodbye to Bodhi as some sort of grenade or thermal detonator gets thrown into the ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, a bodiless death for Bodhi. No Bodhi body.
Bye, Bodhi. Probably easiest character for me to cosplay other than Cassian Andor as an Imperial. I've thought about it. I was like, all right, I've already got the pilot suit. I have a vest that kind of looks like that. I just need some goggles and the backpack full of the spool. I'm Bodhi.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's if you want to go extra level. Yeah.
With
the backpack.
Yeah. All right. So Jin manages to get to the top of the tower. But she's trying to transmit, but she needs to move the antenna. So has to move it at. This is a kind of a fetch quest. It's I have to go to this other part to go pull that lever and come back. And,
Well, again, it doesn't bother me because of the Obi-Wan Kenobi tractor beam thing that we talked about.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Also, the thing is, if Chirrut didn't have to do that and a Bodhi didn't have to do that, I would have felt better about it. But I actually felt like this part was pretty tense.
Oh, yeah, no, it's very tense. It's just kind of funny that the way it's structured like a video game in a way, but it's not a bad thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Krennic gets up there, confronts Jin, and she says who she actually is, and she's monologuing. She's like, oh, this is a rare hero monologue. And as she's monologuing, Krennic is about to shoot her, but then he gets shot by Andor, who's still alive and manages to climb the rest. So unlike his contact, who couldn't climb with, you know, a broken arm or whatever, he managed to climb that entire data tower while being shot.
Well, maybe he found an elevator.
Maybe. That's true. Krennic got up there somehow without climbing. Yeah. That's actually probably the case. I was like, all right, enough shading of his contact.
But no, I liked the Krennic, like, showdown. Mm-hmm. You don't get that so often. That isn't like a lightsaber duel.
Mm-hmm.
You know
what I mean? Oh, yeah. So Jin transmits the data, and we see the classic 8-bit plans of the Death Star that we saw in the briefing scene in A New Hope. And I like how they explained that it's the earlier plans of the Death Star, because they've got, does this ever bother you in A New Hope? Where the placement of the dish on the Death Star in those plans is not accurate to the actual Death Star.
Because
it's in the middle.
People have noticed that. Yes,
it's not on the top. It's in the middle and it's around where the trench is. And like, so they've explained here now that's the earliest plans of it. And that's why it doesn't look how it should.
I mean, plans are plans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Except we get the accurate version of it in our very first look at the Death Star in Episode 2. Do you remember that? They had the Death Star plans in Episode 2.
No, I do not remember that.
Yes, they do. Yep. And it looks how it's supposed to, how it looks in finalized plan. So it all looks like it's going to go well. They transmit the plans. They make their way down from the tower. Oh, shit, it's the Death Star.
Yeah. I mean, I like the way it arrives.
Oh, no, it's great.
Slowly over the horizon.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And like there's something massive coming out of hyperspace. Mm-hmm. And they, again, use just one reactor only. Hit Scarif. Vader will handle the fleet. And here's some poetic justice. Krennic sees the Death Star firing as he's dying.
Mm-hmm.
And Vader's Star Destroyer halts the escape of the rebel fleet. And this is where we say bye to Jin and Andor. And Andor tells Jin, your father would be proud of you. And it was like, Cassian, Marvel would be proud of you too. Your mom would be proud of you.
Yeah, if only they knew. And his sister that they never talk about again. Mm-hmm.
And so Vader prepares a boarding party, and we've got the rebels got to get the Death Star plans out, and Vader scene, and Vader is aura farming here.
Yeah. So, yeah, everybody loves the Vader scene. I think I like it for a different reason than everybody else does.
Well, what was your reason?
So people like it because it makes Darth Vader look cool and badass, which it does. Sure. I always thought Darth Vader was badass anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it's very scary and intense.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
the way they end the movie.
Yeah. See, that's also why I like, because it's like, and maybe it's just for me, being around Darth Vader cosplayers a lot because of being in the 501st or even seeing him at Disneyland or whatever. Like, Vader, in a way, like, for a bit, had lost the fear.
Yeah,
and
clearly.
Seeing this in IMAX on the, like, that opening night, like, oh, crap, Vader's scary again. Wow.
Yeah, now let's see them do the same with the stormtroopers. It's like, have you seen the video of stormtroopers and Darth Vader dancing at Disney World?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you've lost a bit of the fear of Vader. I'm like, now it's like, oh, I'm afraid of Vader again.
Good. I mean, yeah, that's how it should be.
That's why I like the scene, because, you know, not because, oh, I mean, yes, he's badass here, but it's also like, it's terrifying. His full power. Like, again, not against a Jedi, but against just random rebel fighters, and he just demolishes that.
So this, and also Luke Skywalker versus the Dark Troopers and Mandalorian. I'm not a Disney Star Wars hater. It has ups and downs, but I do appreciate that they really give Darth Vader and Luke a chance to use 21st century effects to really let him go to town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They managed to get the plans out, and they launched the Tantive IV. Now, remember I told you to put a pin in that? I have questions.
Okay, sure.
So, we see R2 and 3PO in Yavin, and we're told that Admiral Raddus has already gone to his ship.
Right.
His ship, has had the Tantive IV inside of it.
Mm.
When did they get up there?
I mean, I just assumed that they like left immediately. And it takes, like, just because Admiral Raddus is in the ship doesn't mean they have time to like,
also,
get it all prepped and ready to go.
Where has Leia been?
Somewhere else.
Yeah, but she should have already been there because she's in the ship already.
Yeah, I guess she was in Yavin 4, but not part of the meetings.
Yeah, but the way that Bail talks about it, I was trust her with my life, implies that she's not there. Like, and the Mon Mothma's not, they're talking vaguely about her, but not actually talking about her. Implies that she's not there.
Like, I mean, you know I love to nitpick, but I don't have a problem with those.
Oh, this is the one I'm like, but they're here, they're there. How do they all get there and inside there? I'm going to leave it alone because...
Mm.
But also, and this is not a nitpick, but it just makes me laugh, mm-hmm. that literally Vader saw this ship take off.
Yeah.
And Leia's lying about this being a consular ship on a diplomatic mission to Alderaan. It's a bold-faced lie.
Yeah, it makes it even more ridiculous because he literally just saw her hyperspace mm-hmm. away
but
5 minutes earlier.
But if this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
I mean, among many other things.
But, and it, so some of this is my part. Like, this doesn't make any sense, but it still works for me. Like, and you see, like, seeing Leia and you're hearing her, what have they brought us? Hope. That actually got me all, and again, now I want to watch A New Hope. Like, I almost immediately went to, all right, what would have worked is if the Disney Plus up next had been A New Hope. If I had been able to just press a button and go into it like I did with when I at the end of season 2 of Andor, and that's literally what happened last time, is that there was Disney Plus made it easy that I could just go into the next thing. But instead, they suggested some other show instead of A New Hope.
Yeah,
so you didn't like that. You didn't like the Leia scene.
No, I would have... Again, just like Tarkin, you could open the door, seen the bun hair.
Okay. Your problem was a CGI face. It wasn't have Leia showing up.
No, having Leia there is fine. I didn't CGI face.
I mean, I've gone, you know, to quote my fair lady, I've grown accustomed to her face.
Okay, that's fine. I have not, though.
Yeah, because I've seen it multiple times. It doesn't look terrible. They use it sparingly. They're just in one scene and that's it. It's not like Tarkin where he's there the whole time. So yeah, I was okay with it.
I mean, it's an improvement over Tarkin for sure, but yeah. I feel like if this was made in the 80s, mm-hmm. they would have just had the back of her head be like, for you, and then you see a hand take it and it says, hope. I don't know, something.
Yeah. Well, how would you feel if they recast it with her daughter? Or if they had used her daughter as a stand-in.
It would have been better than a CGI zombie.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, all right. Because, well, I don't know if you know that for the scenes in Rise of Skywalker where you see young Leia, they had her daughter, who's Billie Lourd, do the motion capture for that. And they used her
fiction.
In filming, and then they mapped the face onto it. So, I know, but with that, our movie ends.
Spy fact versus spy fiction.
When the saga begins.
Yep.
All right, so now it is time for our spy fact versus fiction. Would you like to go first?
Yeah, I've got a little bit. So
okay.
In the, not to spark off any fandom wars, but in
Too
the
late.
Old expanded universe, now known as Legends, the stealing of the Death Star plans carried out much differently. Instead, it was performed by... Kyle Katarn, a mercenary employed by the Rebel Alliance, and like the first couple levels are him stealing the Death Star plans.
The first couple levels of Star Wars Dark Forces. For
exactly.
PC,
yes, that's
CD-ROM.
Right. Yeah. Which fun game. Now, I was trying to think of, all right, is there any comparable real life spy or heist story like this? There's not, and I couldn't find anything really concrete, but what I did find was an interesting article on StarWars.com about the inspirations that for Rogue One. Now, Galen Erso himself, they found inspiration from Robert Oppenheimer.
I could see that.
And the Manhattan Project. Yeah. And as we've seen in the movie Oppenheimer, you know, he had immense regrets about that. You know, it was about the science room. I also got a bit of a Wernher von Braun from him as well.
You know, except Wernher von Braun was like an actual Nazi.
Yeah, I know. I was like, a little bit. It was like, in terms of the actual makeup of the crew and everything, like, they had inspiration from not two real stories, but from two movies, The Guns of Navarone and Where Eagles Dare.
Mm.
And this is from StarWars.com. They said, at its most basic, Guns of Navarone is about a small team against a big, unthinkable mechanical threat, and a larger operation that awaits off-screen is dependent on their success. Oh, interesting.
Mm.
And then they said that Where Eagles Dare came up in conversation was when discussing the infiltration of the Scarif Citadel, basically the scenes with Jin, Cassian, and K2 disguised as Imperials bluffing their way through and surrounded at every corner by the enemy is something that occurs memorably in the film. So I think I looked them up. Guns of Navarone isn't explicitly a spy film, but Where Eagles Dare, the characters are like an SOE force. So we could cover that in the future.
I mean, it's like the Dirty Dozen, which we talked about already, but I don't want to know if everybody dies, so I have to watch
But fun thing about Guns of Navarone, there was a sequel to it called Force 10 from Navarone, starring a young Harrison Ford.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yes.
The last thing I've got is about the data center that they go through. It is literally a data center, isn't it? or the data tower. I haven't found anything specifically, but it seems to be inspired by how you used to have tape storage back in like the 70s and 80s. And the most prominent one being is like a storage tech is what it's called. And you literally had all these cassette tapes inside this cylindrical tube with a robot arm that would go around and select the different tapes and insert them in. Storage tech has a number of different models of it, but they have one of them at the National Cryptologic Museum. And as soon as I saw, I'm like, wait, this looks like the thing from Rogue One.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. So that's what I've got for Spy.
Don't keep it on the cloud.
Yeah. So that's what I got for Spy Fact versus Spy Fiction.
Okay, so I have a couple. So Saw Gerrera's guys perform what's called an L-shaped ambush against the Imperial forces.
Okay, interesting.
So the way it works is imagine the forces are going along a road and you cut them off, like those guys that I talked about who didn't take cover and just immediately got killed. But you have guys directly in front of them and you have guys to the side. Okay, if that makes sense. On one side, but not the other. So you only have them on one side, so that way you're not shooting your own people. And if they retreat backwards, the people in front are shooting at them. And if they stay, they're getting hit from both sides. According to Wikipedia, there's three kinds of ambushes, which is one I just described. Another is linear, where they're all equally distant in a line. And then there's V-shaped. Hmm. And the idea is that way you don't hit your own people.
Hmm.
But more importantly, this is also from Wiki, I wanted to talk about assassinations of Iranian nuclear scientists.
Oh, interesting. So, okay. All right.
Right. So the part where Galen Erso is being targeted by Andor and by a whole fleet of X-Wing fighters is actually more applicable now than when it came out. Because we just had this war with Iran where leaders were getting bombed to kill them. So I looked up assassinations of nuclear scientists. I'll tell you about a few.
Sure.
But none of them were bombed, which is interesting.
Terrorists
get bombed and military leaders get bombed, but not scientists.
Huh.
So on 12 January 2010, Masoud al-Mohammadi, professor of physics at the University of Tehran, was killed by a remote-controlled bomb attached to a motorcycle parked near his car.
Ooh.
And then another one named Majid Shahariani on 29 November was killed by a bomb launched from a motorcycle as well. And then finally, on 23 July 2011, a scientist named Darush Rezinejad was shot five times by people riding on a motorcycle in front of his home. So, yeah, it's like a guy who's building a weapon of mass destruction. You know, do you target him just like the rebels did? I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Favorite quotes.
Okay, so now it is time for our favorite quotes. I guess I can go first this time.
Okay.
So the movie was actually more quotable than I remembered. So something I liked about the original trilogy is they didn't feel the need to explain everything all the time. Okay? So they say things like, General Kenobi, you served with my father in the Clone Wars. What are the Clone Wars? They never explain it. Doesn't matter. For a thousand generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic. What's that? Which leads me to one of a quote. Krennic says right at the beginning, the work has stalled. We need you to come back. So, and you know what you're talking about? Later on, Andor's context says, a planet killer. That's what they called it. There's a quote where Jyn Erso says, I've never had the luxury of political opinions. And let's see. I liked Squadron Up, Target Edu. Like, you know, like in the original trilogy, you had those like cool minimal military lines. Admiral says, I say we fight.
Very yeah. Winston Churchill.
Yeah. And then finally, one thing I really liked, way too good for a Star Wars movie, is Chirrut says, there is more than one sort of prison captain. You carry yours wherever you go.
Good line. Good line. All right. I've got, you know, from K2SO, his first line. Congratulations. You are being rescued. Please do not resist.
Yeah, I try not to do the meme ones.
I know. That's a good. And well, I didn't remember this from the first time, any of the other times I saw it, where Cassian says, I'm beginning to think the Force and I have different priorities.
True.
And I had to throw in one more meme line. Be careful not to choke on your aspirations, Director.
I remember when he said that, people were like, see, Darth Vader's clearly a dad because he knows his dad jokes.
And then this is actually something I didn't remember. It's from one of Jyn's speeches, but it reminds me of a similar line from Marvel. But one fighter with a sharp stick and nothing to lose can take the day.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me of that, you know, the one man speech from Captain America.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that. You know what? I like that. All right.
Good. Right, yeah, the movie had more better dialogue than I remembered.
Mm-hmm. All right, just a lot of unnecessary dialogue.
There is that too. Right. I mean, do you agree with me or no?
I don't necessarily. I mean, I think it didn't, or if it was there, it didn't bother me.
Okay.
Ratings.
All right, so let's see here. Now it's time for our ratings on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis. 1 being Avengers 1998 level bad, and 10 being even better than Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. How will we rate Rogue One?
All right, I'm curious. Let's hear it, Zach.
Do I have to go first?
Yeah.
Well, I actually wrote down the pros and cons this time.
Okay, that's good. Yep.
So the pros is the visuals are great. The scenery, the costumes, the ships, the action. It's all really good. It even looks better than when it came out. Red and gold leader, love it. The action is good. The space battles are good. The moral ambiguity wasn't successful, but I liked that they went for it.
Yeah.
Also, good villains, scary villains. I thought Director Krennic was a great villain. It's almost too bad that he died, but again, no death, no body. The cons, it's just too long and it's padded. There's a lot of stuff that could be cut.
Okay. All right.
Because what's great about A New Hope is that it moves along so well. And you don't look at it, you're like, oh my God, I still have so much long left. another con is that the characters are pretty underdeveloped. And there are too many of them.
All right.
And our main character, Jyn Erso, really did not do very much for me. And then the zombie CGI characters. So it makes me think. I remember in the past on Spotify Guys, I'm like, the pros are really good. And the cons aren't such a con. In this case, the characters is a pretty bad con. On the other hand, it is Star Wars. I'm a Star Wars fan. I'm going to be nice. It's a good movie. It's enjoyable. If you like Star Wars, you should watch it. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
All right. I remember when it used to be such a struggle to get you to have even rated an 8 out of 10. Like, I think our first 8 out of 10 for
I try to have high standards.
I know. I'm just saying. But I think our first 8 out of 10 for both of us was, what, a Valkyrie.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's pretty accurate still.
Yeah. I know. So this movie, it's interesting. Like, and I really noticed the last time I watched this right after seeing season 2 of Andor was the first, it's two different movies is what it is. The part where everything leading up to Scarif is like an entirely different movie than everything once the rebels arrive at Scarif.
Yeah, that's correct.
And it is probably in a large part due to the reshoots that happened with Tony Gilroy taking over that part of the film and reshooting a lot of that stuff. But even though it is of two parts, it still works for me, and it works well. The Jyn and Galen stuff works even more for me as a father, and you know, thinking about, all right, if I had to, you know, if I had to leave to save my daughters, I'm like, wow, that's a tough choice. It's a hard choice. That actually hit more for me now than it did before. I do like the spy stuff with Andor, but how much of that now is carried over from everything we learned about Andor and his story in the Andor show? It's hard to say. I think it is improved by Andor. Like I liked it initially when I saw it. I like it even more now because of that, because it was getting up. But again, it's, you know, we have to let it stand on its own, really, as a show, as a movie. I like that this is probably the most, other than Andor TV show, is the most spying that we'll ever get in Star Wars. It is the most, ground level is espionage we're probably ever going to get in Star Wars, unless, you know, something very different happens in any of the new movies. Now, I really like this movie. I'd watch it again, and I'm sure I will watch it again. If I decide I want to go on an Andor binge, I will probably end up just watching this all the way through to A New Hope again. I will give this a solid 8 out of 10. Like, as you know, I think where its place in the whole of that exists, if I was judging it all together, I'd give it higher. But just by itself, it is a solid 8 out of 10. Great movie. Recommend it if you're not a Star Wars fan. I would recommend you see Andor, and then after Andor you should watch Rogue One. I wouldn't say watch Rogue One by itself, because if you're not a Star Wars fan, you wouldn't necessarily get everything in there. But if you watch Andor before that, yeah, you probably would be able to get most of it.
It's kind of hard to complain that the movie's too much of a good thing.
You have anything else you want to say, Zach?
I don't think so. I think we've gone on long enough about Rogue One. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And definitely different. That's what we do here on the Spy-Fi Guys. So
yeah.
Thank you all for joining us. You can find us on social media at the Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, Instagram, and our merch store, redbubble.com. Until next time, I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And we are the Spy-Fi Guys, signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Spy-Fi Guys. If you enjoyed our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. The theme song from this podcast is Mistake the Getaway by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Films, books, and television shows reviewed by our podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
This is a personal podcast. Any views, statements, or opinions expressed in this podcast are personal and belong solely to the participants. They do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the participants may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. Any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.
You can find our podcast on social media at The Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, and Instagram.